There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 925, February 14th. 2022. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. I say Marlboro sponsorship in ashes, Norris to stay McLaren man, and welcome to fake launches. Now back to the real deal, the host with the most.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Williams now powered by Duracell. FIA delay any action on the Abu Dhabi snafu. Greg Biffle back for the Daytona 500. And just a reminder, we need your contributions. Keep this program on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you'll want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. I got a free day today. My work laptop went kaput. And so I informed my boss and I was told the IT man does not come to the office on Monday. So tomorrow, Tuesday, will be the first day where I will see my employer's palatial buildings, beautiful downtown Tampa by the riverfront, which is a very nice area. You know, I've been working from home since I joined the company. So appointment is at 9 o'clock. So it should be fun. How are things on the lefty coast?
The lefty coast is just simply marvelous. The greatest weather you could possibly want. Maybe a little too good when it's 70 degrees and sunny and no rain in sight every day. It can be too much.
Well, a local team won a football game. Are the people excited?
Well, we're Northern California. We are not excited.
Oh, we're hipsters.
We're hipsters and beatniks up here.
Sophisticated.
Exactly.
Very good. Very good. And how are things for Mr. Rogers?
Mr. Rogers is a wonderful man that still has his health and is still vertical. So that's all I ask.
That's very good, sir. That's very good. Okay, sir, here is good news. Less than 10 days from the rise of the happy and shining sun in Spain, pre-season testing about to begin in Barcelona with racing cars that are looking like racing cars. Fans are excited, and Moa is one of them. I think we are all set for the 7/8-time world champion to be back in the saddle and giddy up for Grand Prix racing. Red Bull has the bright max factor. 2022 will not be their first rodeo. That, I feel, will be the scenery at the front. Prancing horses hopefully will provide the scare. The Reds are coming not only to Ukraine, but also to Bahrain. And that was political zinger of the day. What say you, senor?
Well, I'm enjoying the virtual car launches. I thought AlphaTauri was pretty good. I thought it was very creative. Did you see that?
Absolutely. Looks beautiful.
Yeah, and I liked all the modern twists on the steering wheel being plugged into the brick. And all of a sudden, evolution takes place. It's beautiful. That was very, very well done. So I give AlphaTauri kudos. And the Aston Martin, so that was the real car. Seb looked like a mess, but he does have, he's got a lot on his shoulders for sure. There's no doubt, especially with, this is it pretty much for him.
Yes, and you know, going back to the AlphaTauri car, the design so nicely and tastefully done. It reminded me of the West McLaren car, which was silver and just a West logo, and there was like a flash of red or bright color. And so it's very nicely done, and these cars are beautiful. You know, I'm beginning to like Formula One even more. Let's put it this way. You mentioned about Aston Martin. Their launch was very impressive, I have to say. I don't want to make any comparison, but I will say the Aston Martin launch was very impressive. And it had the usual, you know, the diversity and inclusivity, which is now, you cannot live without it, no matter what you do, no matter what you read, no matter what you watch. Anyway, but the most impressive part was Sebastian Vettel's hairdo. It looked like he missed his Vidal Sassoon appointment. And you know what they say there. If you don't look good, we don't look good. And like you said, I totally agree with you, and we agree once in a while. There is a lot riding on Seb's shoulders. He will have to bring back his blown diffuser mojo and overpower my boy Lollipop like he did the Weber barbecue. But I must say, the green on that car looks very good now on TV. Did you notice that, sir?
Well, we'll see. I haven't seen it on the track and amongst other cars, so I'm still going to wait and see how that looks on my vintage 1962 silver, what's it called? Silverstone? RCA, that's it. RCA.
Okay, yeah. That's good. Okay, McLaren's launched their car with a shade of beautiful gulf blue and orange. Cars are looking good and drivers are looking good, especially Lando Norris's Cayman Island Barclays account. After signing an extension with McLaren with the salary approaching $1 million per month, he is now in the Premier League of Formula One. And he's the third highest paid driver now, only behind, you know who, the two title combatants. Are you expecting some magic from McLaren?
Not necessarily.
I think they will keep moving on the vertical trajectory they are on. And I will not be surprised if Daniel Ricciardo gets another win or two. And hopefully, Lando Norris came very close to winning a race. Hopefully he will get, if he can get two or three first time winners this year, that'll make me very happy. But I'm expecting good things from McLaren, and we'll just have to see when we see the times from Barcelona, see who's got it and who does not. I don't know, I know they're not doing the TV thing, Abe, but do you know if they're doing a live, like a time thing, like they used to do back in the day?
You know, I have no idea because I don't look at any of those things anymore. You know, the live timing. Oh my goodness. In the old days, I had all that going on in front with the TV and my 44 laptops. And no, I don't do anything like that now. I just have a cup of tea and look straight ahead.
Yeah, now we want everything live, you know, on TV.
Well, I'm not that difficult, no. I just take what I can get.
Yeah, you're a very congenial guy. You know, the famous victory by Machismo, 2005 San Marino Grand Prix, that race, for whatever reason, which happens once, I think, every year, was not televised live in the U.S., and I remember following it on F1's timing feed, and boy, was that very exciting. Oof, absolutely incredible, you know, what the commentary was saying. But Machismo was the hombre of the day. Okay, sir, now we go to your favorite team, Alpine. Prost is gone, but they are tickled pink. BWT, which stands for Best Water Treatment, the Austrian water treatment company, are bringing their pesos and pink color to the French team. When the 2022 Alpine is launched, Le Blue will also have some Le Pink, and I can't wait to see Machismo in pink. What is this world coming to, Mr. Rogers?
Oh, well, we've seen other people in pink over at Aston Martin, so it all works out.
And I know in the past few podcasts you've been pretty downbeat on Alpine, but of course you will never be downbeat on Machismo. Do you think they will win a race? They won last year.
I think they will. I think they're going to be the best out of the rest.
It will be quite a day if Alonso gives them a victory, wouldn't it?
It would be quite a day for the world if Alonso brings a victory. Because a victory from Alonso, a victory from El Machismo, satisfies the hunger.
Man, I'll tell you, if he wins a race and he comes on few podiums, then that's bad news for Oscar Piastri, because then Machismo will continue.
Maybe not.
No, if he wins a race or two and gets on the podium, then I will not be surprised if he comes. But I will be very surprised if he does not get on the podium and the car is... And that will only happen if the car is not competitive. If they have a car that's really not good, then I will be surprised if he continues in 2023. But time will tell, you know. This was the most exciting news for me from the past week. Excess denied, and devil is in the details, as they say. Christian Horner paid £4,000 to win a charity auction to visit the Mercedes F1 factory. Very cheeky of him, which is located in Brackley next to a Tesco supermarket. And some years ago, Mr. Brazier and I were at the gates of the factory, and we had the immense pleasure of waving to JB, Jenson Button, as he was leaving in his Mercedes sedan, probably on his way to Woking to sign a contract with McLaren. Amazingly, Mr. Horner did not read the fine print. Maybe Monisha Kaltenborn is their in-house legal counsel now. And the fine print said, members of other F1 teams not eligible. But I say kudos to Christian for a nice try. Did you find the story interesting, sir?
It was interesting, but I think it was all... I thought it was tongue-in-cheek all the way, and really, I think Christian Horner just wanted more publicity for himself, and he did help raise a lot of money for this charity.
Apparently, he had pulled a stunt like this at McLaren, and he went there with Adrian Newey, when, of course, Adrian was with Red Bull, but they were very restricted in where they could go. So, interesting. Next, sir, we come to money matters. Money makes the world go round, or so they say, and I'm sure they are correct. Anyway, Ferrari Marlboro sponsorship in ashes. The long-standing Marlboro financial arrangement with Ferrari is now done and dusted. Marlboro always paid the driver's salaries, both at Ferrari and McLaren, which include the halcyon days of McLaren Honda and Alain Prost and his new teammate in 1988, Ayrton Senna. And thanks to Carlos Sainz Jr., Spanish bank Santander is back on the red car. Let's see if they can deposit some championship-winning dineros. Dr. Marco does not see the most successful team in F1 as a threat in 2022, saying in his own special way, and I quote, I don't think we will see earthquakes in terms of the balance of power on the track. It may be that Ferrari can take another step forward, winning a race or two, end quote. The last part I do agree with him. I see a maiden win for Carlos Sainz Jr., and success for his teammate also. And man, if Carlos Sainz Jr. wins, it's going to be a very notable historical day for Viva España, because he would be only the second Spanish driver to ever win a Formula One race.
Bravo.
Any thoughts on what Ferrari might do, what Carlito might do?
You know, the more I think about it, I think that everything that everybody was hoping for with the new regulations and the new cars, and then we're going to go see qualifying, and I think the grid is going to look exactly the same as it has been looking for the past 10 years. So that's the scary part.
Oh, amazingly, for the second time on this podcast, I have to agree with you, and I've been saying this, that I feel that, and I may be proven wrong, that the scenery at the front will remain the same. I do not expect pack racing like we used to have in IRL, okay? And we have pack racing basically in GP2 and Formula 2. So I don't expect that. Maybe the field will bunch up a little bit. But I think somebody will surprise many people. I mean, somebody will get it very right. Somebody will totally screw it up and then blame Male Pistons or, you know, something else. I'll put the blame on Pirelli. But we'll see how it works out. But, you know, what would be very good if we have at least one more driver, be it Perez, be it George Russell or Carlito or Charles Leclerc, win some races and kind of like make a dent in the two top gunslingers. So we'll see how it works out. But it should be a great season. I'm happy to see good-looking car. I mean, you know, when they came with the step-nose car, that was horrible. Never thought.
That was definitely a bizarre moment. Yeah, there was some, because I liked, you know, the early high-nose cars, especially the Benetton and the Ferrari. But man, the step-nose thing was pretty frightening. I don't know what happened, but there's an old saying in the automotive industry, if it's ugly, it's going to be slow.
Yeah. And I remember, I think one of the first team to come up with these high noses was Tyrrell, or at least, I think if I remember correctly, they had come up with this concept at one time, long time ago. But the cars are looking good, and let's just hope we can have some side-by-side racing and without any, what I would say, what we don't want is penalty after penalty after penalty. That we don't want. Oh, he drove me off. Oh, he was too close. I did not brake check him. That'll be very, very bad.
Well, we've got that new guy at the head of the FIA. What's his name? Because I think this guy is going to straighten it all out. He has the intellect, the background. I think we're going to see some work in action here, but I think we needed somebody a little more machismo at the top.
Yeah, you know, as they say, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. The problem in Formula One, as we see in politics, you know, is everybody has to agree. I mean, you know, we have all these vested interests. Ferrari has a veto on rules and regulation, and all sorts of deals are made. Do you remember when it looked like that the Grand Prix, remember they were going to do a breakaway series and Ferrari would get involved? I mean, Ferrari was involved with Luca di Montezemolo and Flavio was leading the charge. How did they stop that? Bernie went to Ferrari and said, no, we'll give you 90 millions before anybody's paid a dime. And as soon as Ferrari left, that whole thing collapsed. So, first thing they need to set this thing, and I don't want to dwell on this, we want to know who the race director is. That's very important.
I think it's going to be the same guy.
I will reserve my comment.
I'm just saying, you know, he's not related to Donald Trump. I mean, let's...
We'll see. We'll see.
We believe in second chances.
Yeah, second, third, fourth chances are fine. But we don't want another championship decided like this.
That would be really funny, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I'm sure.
But man, I tell you, what a season we had. I mean, no question, driver of the season was Max Verstappen. So he is a very worthy champion. That I have no problem. Okay. Then we had a thing in Spa, which nobody, including Mike Massey, could do that. That race is not an issue for me because you really cannot have a motor race in those environments. And you know, they ran the race behind safety car. People are complaining. If they had not done, some people would have complained. So, but what a season we had. The most impressive thing for me, I remember Ayrton Senna was put in a situation like this, which he was unable to pull it off, where he had to win the last. In those days, we didn't have 20 races. He had to win the last, I think, three races to win the championship. And Lewis was put in a position to win the last four races to win the championship. And we all know, people who were watching that Grand Prix, how many laps he led. But, as you will remind me, I'm sure, he did not lead the last lap.
It's the most important lap.
Yes.
Yes, that's a stinker. But let's just, hey, it'll go down with the hanging chads.
Oh, yes. Maybe we should call this the Gore Grand Prix.
Exactly. You never know. Bravo.
Yes, so that's the way it goes. And sir, speaking of 2021, you know, the 2022 season is turning out to be a season of boomerangs. Check this out. Hipster is back. Former Ferrari team principal, your favorite, and you were the one who first called him the hipster, Marco Mattiacci, has been appointed new global chief brand and commercial officer for Aston Martin. He took over from Stefano Domenicali, but relationship with then Fiat chairman Sergio Marchionne, you know, that did not gel. And hipster used to be head of Ferrari in North America, and that is probably where he got to be buddies with Lawrence, as the senior Stroll owns the Ferrari dealership in Montreal. Mattiacci was replaced by Maurizio Arrivabene, and I met Maurizio in Austin a few years ago. He used to be a senior executive at Philip Morris in Lausanne, Switzerland, but looked more like chairman of the pier and board in New Jersey. And so we'll have to see what Mattiacci can do. But, you know, Lawrence Stroll has a lot of money. Even he made a comment, Formula One cost a lot of money. So, you know, it must be very expensive. But they have this big sponsorship deal from Cognizant and Aramco. And there is no shortage of sand and oil petrodollars in Saudi Arabia, as we all know. And so I think, and they're building a new factory, new wind tunnel. I think in the next 2-3 years, they will become a front-running team. I'm very confident. And that's what Lawrence wants. And he is going to spend Canadian dollars, euros, American dollars, whatever it takes to get them going. But the real question is, you know, in that team, one seat will always be filled by you know who. Let me ask you a question. If they get throw money behind it and get the car to be the most competitive, do you think for the second seat he will look around for a driver who can get me a championship?
He will.
You don't think he will look for physical so Lance Stroll can become world champion?
No, I think he's a businessman. He can easily separate hanging around, you know, the nepotism. He wants success more than he wants his child to be champion.
Well, you know, his child is no slouch. He is quick. You don't get to be on podium or a pole position in Formula One or even win the European F3 championship and beat George Russell and Max Verstappen in a karting event, major karting event in Las Vegas. So I think if they get a car that's head and shoulders above everybody, I will not be surprised if the focus is on... you know what he did in Formula 3? European. This is what I've read in several published reports. This team, Prema Power Team, he bought the team, and he, according to these reports, this is not my opinion, according to these reports, he gave some of the seats, because, you know, normally they have 3 or 4 cars, some of the seats were given to other good drivers free of charge, and one of his teammates was Tom Blomqvist, if I remember correctly. But with the condition that Lance Stroll will be the team leader in terms of being on the track. So you can engineer things and you can engineer success if you have the goods. So, but I think if they get a car that's very, very competitive, like Mercedes has been for many years, I think I will pour some maple syrup and take a bet on Lance winning the world championship if they get to that point. I mean, the guy is still very young and he will have a lot of experience till then. But it will be his bad luck if in the next 3-4 years another Max Verstappen shows up in Formula One or some other talented driver comes in who goes and finishes on the podium in first 12 races. Then, you know, he might be calling, Daddy, it hurts so bad. Know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. So why don't we take a quick break so we can wet our whistles. So we'll be back after this brief water break.
At a time like this, you probably don't care that we use only carefully selected hops, or the finest grains, or pure artesian brewing water. But you'd taste the difference if we didn't, so we do. Olympia, it's the water and a lot more.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Before we go south of the border down Mexico Way for Formula E, may I request you to enlighten us with your favorite driver in NASCAR, Greg Biffle, coming back, and what's going on with him, and is he going to win the Daytona 500?
Well, first of all, he's not taking any hair advice from Sebastian Vettel. Second, he's going to be with NY Racing NASCAR team, and it's all set up. He's signed a contract, and he'll be on the grid for the Daytona 500.
Yes, it should be fun. And Mr. Rogers is going to watch the 500, right?
The last six laps.
Yes. Okay, so now we go to the Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez. Formula E was in action, and Pascal Wehrlein, driving for Porsche, wins the race over his teammate, Mr. André Lotterer, Kai, and Jean-Éric Vannes was third. Now what happened, Jean-Éric and André were complaining there was a gushing sound behind Pascal's Porsche. But Pascal Wehrlein, you know, he was the youngest DTM champion. This is a very good talent, and I'm disappointed that things did not work out for, you know, his mother is from Mauritius. So talk about diversity. But I do remember, when he was with he was trying to get a seat at Force India, I believe it was, when it was between him and Esteban Ocon, and the word leaked out that Force India preferred Ocon because of his attitude. So I remember even before then, I was talking to a German lady, a journalist, and she said to me that Pascal is very arrogant. He thinks he's the new Lewis Hamilton. But I think he's a good talent. And hopefully he can, maybe he should come to IndyCar racing and win the Indy 500. That will be good. And you know, whatever happened to this guy, another German guy, Adrian Sutil, one time Lewis's best friend.
Yeah, he's a pianist in Vegas at the Howard Johnson's.
In the Liberace Orchestra?
Exactly.
Yes. Okay, in the Formula E Championship, Mr. Eduardo Mortara, who is a Italian-speaking Swiss, he is leading 43 points. Nyck de Vries, he is on 37 points, second, and Wehrlein is third. And it's amazing, you know, how motor racing operates. Nyck de Vries, I followed his karting career because he was the youngest world champion at that time in karting, youngest double world champion in karting. He was the man everybody wanted in. He was managed by Lewis Hamilton's dad and used to be in the McLaren driver development program. But he took 3 years to win the basic Formula Renault Euro Cup, and that pretty much shut down his Formula One career. But, you know, not everybody gets to Formula One despite being a very good driver. So that's the way it goes. And sir, not being able to get the big prize is the subject of our next mantra here, or information, historical look, called Close But No Cigar. This is a look at some of the drivers who were smoking success, extremely talented, but remain uncrowned champions, as per history books. But people who followed their career, they know the score, to borrow a phrase from Mr. Bobby Rahal. Sir, may I have your digital express consent to proceed? Here's a text from PDR. Gracias. Okay, sir, we shall start with the biggest name who did not win the world championship, and that is without any question, Stirling Moss.
You've raced in this country before, and we have quite a few good tracks here. What's your favorite track in the U.S.?
Well, you've got course circuits that didn't exist when I was here, but I think, frankly, probably my favorite was Laguna Seca. Riverside, Watkins Glen was not bad. I think they did actually have better circuits than the one I drove on. But I think I'd probably say Laguna Seca is the best, or Road America. You know, I don't really mind any. I prefer proper road circuits because you don't have many of those.
Moss was called Mr. Motor Racing. He is definitely one of the greatest drivers of all time. In 1955, he scored his first Grand Prix win over Mercedes teammate Fangio in the British Grand Prix at Aintree near Liverpool. Same year, he won the famous Mille Miglia, also driving a Mercedes. This time, the car was number 722 because it started at 7:22 a.m. And that's the number that were allotted to the cars in the Mille Miglia. If he was starting at 8:30, your car number was 830. And this car, Mr. Rogers, is now at the Mercedes Museum in Stuttgart. And some years ago, I took a trip to this museum just to see this car. And it's a very nice museum, I have to say. Okay, sir, in Formula One from 1955 to 58, Moss was second in the championship 4 years in a row, losing the 1958 championship in the final race in Casablanca by a point to Mike Hawthorn. After this, after being second four years in a row, he was third in the championship 3 years in a row. So that's like 7 years finishing in the top three. Maybe we can call him Buffalo Bills of Formula One. Will that work?
Perfect.
And his last championship F1 race was the United States Grand Prix at Watkins Glen in 1961. And that race was won by a driver from Scotland by the name of Innes Ireland. And that's a very historical win because it was the first Formula One championship win by a Lotus car, but not Lotus team, because it was privately entered by Rob Walker. So very interesting. And Moss remained an ambassador for Mercedes after his racing days. Decades later, Mercedes would launch a Stirling Moss high-end model, which was very impressive. So talk about star power. And you know, when I went to do an interview with him at his house in Aventura, Florida, he was waiting for me outside, and this wonderful Mercedes was parked there, and it was not much space there. And he says to me, "Oh, you can park next to this car." And I said to him, "I'll park on the street. I'm not Stirling Moss." So that was a very good day for me. And it was very kind of him to invite me to his house. And I spent almost an hour talking to him. So we have some very great memories with some great legends of the world of motor racing. Okay, sir, next we will move on to a gentleman who was my first racing hero, I would say, because I was 14 years old. I was totally mesmerized by this guy, driver, Ronnie Peterson. Ronnie was the Kimi of his time. Super sweet, as he was called, was super fast in any car without trying hard. We are recording this, Mr. Rogers, on February 14, and this was the day he was born in 1944 in a town called Urebru. He came through the karting ranks in F3 system. There is a video on YouTube showing him washing his clothes at an F3 event. Times have certainly changed. One of his famous wins was the 1969 Monaco Formula 3 race, which he had a long duel with fellow Swede René Bassel, and Ronnie won the race. And 2 years later, he won the European Formula 2 championship over another of my all-time favorites, Carlos Reutemann from Argentina. In 1971, Ronnie was in his second year in Formula One and was second in the championship behind Jackie Stewart, driving for Mr. Max Mosley in the STP March. In 1973, he was on his way to a famous first win in the very first Swedish Grand Prix when he had a Mansell moment late in the race and had to replace a flat tire. The maiden win would come with the Mediterranean Mistral win and the straight at Paul Ricca same season. He won at Monza three times, 1973 and 74 with Lotus, and in 1976 in a unsponsored March, which was very impressive. The same track would claim his life in 1978. That season he was teammate to Mario Andretti, and his contract stated he was number two. When people suggested to, and this has been reported in racing media many times, when people would suggest to Ronnie to ignore the contract as this was his best chance to win the world championship, he would say, "My eyes were open when I signed the contract." Something this day and age, no teammate would say that. And you know what was interesting about him? Like, Kimi could go fast in any car. Mario Andretti used to complain when they were teammates at Lotus that he would spend all day long testing for the car, making changes to the car and, you know, dealing with the team and all that kind of stuff, and then finally set a very quick time. And then when Ronnie would jump in the car, within a few laps, he would match Mario's time. Sometimes he'd go faster. He was very quick traveler. He also raced for BMW in touring car races in America, and also raced for Ferrari in sports car racing. Yeah, I was very, very sad in how he died of embolism after the start line crash at Monza. Okay, sir, another guy who came and went like a fast flash, Gilles Villeneuve. He was a complete unknown in European racing. It only took one Grand Prix, the 1977 British Grand Prix, before he signed for Enzo. His style was slipping and sliding, kind of like Ronnie and Keke Rosberg. Very exciting to watch and still sensationally fast. Like Moss, he scored his first Grand Prix win on home soil in 1978, driving the beautiful Ferrari 312 T3. Then there was epic win at Jarama in the 1981 Spanish Grand Prix, where he held off several cars lap after lap. And this turned out to be his final Grand Prix victory before the sad day in Zolder, 1982. In 1979, Gilles won both the United States Grand Prix East and West, Watkins Glen and Long Beach. But it was the duel at Dijon same year with René Arnoux that will live in the hearts and minds of racing fans forever. Gilles was one of the most likable racing drivers of all time. As I have said a few times on the podcast, and will say again, many fans will remember him, and I am definitely one of them, long after they have forgotten some championship-winning drivers. His mission was completed by his son, Jacques, in 1987, and speaking of Jacques, he will be at the Daytona 500. Can you believe that, sir?
Yeah, he's always in and out of NASCAR. He's a pretty funny guy, but hey, at least he's hanging in there.
But let me ask you a question. What comes to mind when the word Montreal or the Montreal track is mentioned?
For me, are you prepared for that?
Tell me.
It was his birthday, and he was crying like a baby, and his name is
Jean Alesi, Motivation?
Yes, Monsieur Le Motivation.
Oh, Mr. Rogers, you are disappointing me.
No, I'm not going to say it.
There was something more important in Montreal. I'll give you a hint. Floor shine.
Enlighten me.
The shoe. You have forgotten the shoe now?
The shoe, I mean, you know, I know the shoe is exciting, but it's faded. It's fading.
I could not believe when they restarted the race, Danica Patrick leading and a shoe flying over the track. Oh, my God.
Yes, it was meant for George Bush, by the way.
You know, we have to investigate. Maybe it was thrown by Milka Duno.
Indeed. Indeed. Keep up the good work.
And I remember the shoe that was thrown at Devia in Baghdad.
That shoe is now in the Smithsonian Institution.
Oh, really? I thought it would be at the Cowboy Museum in Crawford, Texas.
That's a different museum and a different shoe. Anyway, keep up the good work, NASA. Outstanding. Are you ready for testing? It's coming up pretty soon. I mean, we're talking 9 days, 10 days.
Mr. Roger, let me just tell you, I am really, really enjoying working from home. And I'm going to tell you why. As we are recording this, and I'm not making this up, I got the muted TV through YouTube of, the, I think it's one of the, from the early 1990s, British Formula 3. Mika Salo, Mika Hakkinen, and stuff like that, Alan McNish. And all day long when I'm working, I got something going on, some documentary, history of this. Not always motor racing, 80% motor racing, but I am really loving it. And I think YouTube is the best thing since sliced bread and tandoori naan. And I like both of them, as you know. So, I cannot wait for the testing. Oh, and speaking of testing, the Indy cars are testing here in Sebring. But, you know, I got to work, so I'm not going. And our friend, Mr. Inam Ahmed, he is testing with the Indy Pro Series in Homestead today and tomorrow. So, the buzz of motor racing is all around, and I'm very excited. I am almost, Mr. Rogers, ready to click the button on Orbitz.com by this weekend and finally book a flight across the pond. And I'm talking to some people. I'm waiting for them to give me the green light, but I cannot wait till the last time. So I had a chat with Mr. Brazier, and we ran through a list of... There's no shortage of motorsports people in England, as you know. So we're thinking of maybe I'm going to wait till midweek, end of the week, and if I don't hear from these two gentlemen, one in Germany, one in England, then I may send out feelers to some other people. And what I'm hoping, if we can get some big hitters, you know, like Ross Brawn or Damon Hill or Patrick Head, no guarantees. Oh, by the way, Damon Hill tweeted that he has COVID, so we would like to wish him well. So hopefully we can do something, and that will make me very happy. And this German I'm trying to meet is in Germany. His name is Jochen Nierpasch. He's the guy who brought Mr. Schumacher into Formula One as head of Mercedes Motorsports. Prior to that, he was BMW and Ford. He lives in the south of Germany, not too far from the Sauber factory in Hinwil, Switzerland. So my game plan is, if I get the green light from him, then maybe I can send an email to Sauber and see if Mr. Peter will speak to me. And you know, Peter Sauber, my favorite story with Peter Sauber is Alex Zanardi saying in his own book that there was an opening at Sauber team. He called Sauber Formula One team, asked for Peter Sauber, and when he got on the phone, he asked Peter Sauber, "Mr. Sauber, do you speak English?" He hung up on him. Can you imagine calling a Formula One team owner asking him, "Do you speak English?"
It's pretty embarrassing. I mean,
it is very piss poor, I would say.
Yeah, he was thinking about, you know, he's usually dealing with the maintenance and gardeners at the house.
Who, Peter Sauber or Zanardi?
Both of them, really.
Yeah, so there are some very interesting stories. And, you know, an interesting story with Peter Sauber is he had Kimi Raikkonen before he became, you know, famous without saying a word. And then he also had Michael Schumacher. That was very, very... I remember Michael Schumacher in that silver Mercedes sponsored by AEG. You mentioned something about Duracell batteries and Williams. What's going on there, sir?
They have Duracell sponsorship now. Big, big bucks.
I have a question for you. When Darlington Corporation was announced as buying the team, there was a list of businesses listed that they own. I am thinking, I'm not sure, we may have to look into it. Maybe one of their businesses owned a Duracell.
Well, Duracell's owned by Berkshire Hathaway.
Okay, so I don't know if they have some money invested there.
I'm a professional now, sir.
I can tell.
Anyway, keep up the good work, Nass. It's outstanding. It's another beautiful world also. Let's not forget, today's the 14th. Happy Valentine's to all the F1 Weekly ladies and the F1 ladies. Right, Nasser?
See, you're not going on the all-inclusivity program. You may hear from the Department of Justice now.
Thank you. I'm sorry, but everyone, God bless you all. Nass, keep up the good work. I fixed it. And I want you to have a great week. We'll see everybody next week. I want you to have fun listening to the show. If you have any issues, email me, clark@f1weekly.com. Nasser, thanks for joining us. Keep up the good work. And I want to thank everybody who listens. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.